Marco, what is the biggest myth around transformation?
The biggest myth about a transformation is that it's not needed and you can just let it go. I think systems need to be transformed. It's inevitable. Eventually, you have too much of baggage in a system. And the system is not technology, it's with the process and everything. For a company that's growing, it's key. You will run to a point and then it's inevitable. You gotta do it. You gotta commit to it.
Love that answer, Marco. All that and more on this episode of Transformers. What does transformation mean, and what can we learn from those leading the way? Join me as I talk to my fellow nerds about technology, business, industry trends, and maybe even a little bit about us being human. My name is Anne Fanai. I'm CIO and Vice President of Business Platform Transformation at IBM, and this is Transformers, a Think podcast. Marco Bell, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Anne. My pleasure to be here. It's fantastic.
You and I met each other about a year ago, and I think what's really fascinating is we are analogs. You're at Red Hat, I'm at IBM, but we have really super similar roles. And, you know, tell me a little bit about your role at Red Hat. I'd love to share that with everybody.
I think very similar roles, right? So I got kind of pushed into this role by coincidence, as it goes in our roles, right? As in, hey, Marco, how do you feel to do a big transformation of our sales platform? And I think at that time I was sober, but I said yes. And that's how I got to this gig that I've been doing the last 2 years, basically owning all the core business platforms at Red Hat. So being it our ERP, being at our go-to-market, be our marketing tools, and to actually help be a driving big transformation. So that's my role. I'm actually having fun.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, I've loved getting to know each other, working together at IBM and Red Hat, but I think you've had a phenomenal career in open source and you've seen things as they've gone, just from really early years to, you know, pretty robust now. And you've led some pretty significant transformations in your end. And, you know, you've got some really fun stories, I think would be great to share.
Yeah, so I've been, I'm coming up to 19 years at Red Hat, which is 19 years at Red Hat is going from like 50 million revenue to what we have now. It's fantastic, right? Being a great journey. I got here I was working for another company and they had product roadmap changes and the customers that I was helping, they were not agreeing. And so finally, I found my way to Red Hat. There's a funny story for another time, but I found my way here and there was a lot of moments that I thought, like, what did I do? turns out, you know, growing a business and being in different parts, I started on the support side. I built up a lot of the support infrastructures. I did, I run the business. So at that time, shadow IT was okay. I was a big proponent of shadow IT. And now being on the IT side is like, oh, shadow IT is bad. But I've done big transformations. We came from, Red Hat, this old company, but we've been growing so fast. And IT was never, I was kind of funny, never, hey, just move fast, don't clean up. And I was mentioning it to you, right? I did a big Salesforce transformation for the support organization 14 years ago. And it's funny, right? We did so much custom code. We did this and that. And now it's kind of like, yeah, we got to clean up that mess again. So it's a fun journey. It's been a super fun journey.
Yeah, no, and I think that's one of the really fun, challenges we talked about having in common. Maybe fun, you know, some days and really, truly fun other days. But it's this idea of the platforms have come so far along, like the Salesforces of the world, you know, IBM is a company, what we build, SAP's, other partners that we have. And those partners can do the things that we used to do with custom code. And I think that cleanup's been super interesting, especially as we look at the partner companies. I got a question for you. I want to see. I think we have this answer in common too. Is what's harder, changing the business behavior or changing the technology?
I think that's super easy to answer. Right, the technology is simple. Right, I think it's the behaviors, and it's we all like we behave in a certain way, and we get trained as in, hey, this is the way you gotta operate, and all of us kind of stepping back and seeing things differently, that's the big problem with transformations, right? I've seen it in the recent sales transformation we've done. And we have, it's all in good intent, right? I think like a company like Red Hat or IBM wouldn't function if there was like foundationally good intent by everybody, but we get stuck in ways to do. And if you ask the questions like, why exactly are we doing it? You get the, yeah, we always used to do it. Oh, it's this and that, right? Versus really pulling and changing things. But I think that's your job. My job is not just to do technology. It's also how do we transform the business with the business, right?
Yeah, no, I totally with you. And I think sales, I find that to be really fascinating as part of the transformation because, you know, truly we want to support our sellers in every way. You know, these are the folks that, you know, make the revenue, make our companies, you know, run and that engine go. But it's really hard, I think, to fall in this trap of like, would a tool, would a customization, would this, like, how much more revenue would it generate versus like really keeping that focus on the customer? And it's such a balance, and you know, you want to do your best to support everyone. And I know that's been something, built really strong partnerships over here with my friends in sales. And I assume you had to do some pretty similar stuff to get your Salesforce work rolling.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky that 2 years before I was actually in the sales organization, I was running part of sales. And that way I actually knew, first of all, I knew the people and I knew some of the, hey, this is why some processes happen. You can still challenge it, but you got to understand. I think it's for a lot of us in IT, it's too easy to say, oh, sales, they don't know anything. Whereas it's really like living that for a while and actually understanding, okay, this is why forecasting works that way. This is why the cadence happens. And also seeing if that doesn't happen, what the impact is, right? So I've, to be honest, 2 years before in sales was really demanding for me as a techie being in that organization, but it actually built that knowledge that I was able to kind of lead the transformation and having that connection to the sales team. I think that's true for all the transformation we got to do, right? If you're in the ERP, understanding what finance is really helps.
No, and I love that you said that. I think one of the things, you know, when I'm talking to folks or if I'm mentoring someone, they'll ask me what makes my career unique or did I learn something? And it's very similar to what you just said. I kind of went to different business units, went to different groups. I actually worked in a technical sales organization, and you see how the pieces come together, what it takes to run the company, what it takes to build software. I said, one of the things I'm particularly proud of is similar to you, you spent time in sales. I know you spent time as a CFO, I think, as well. But it's this idea of like, hey, I've seen what it takes to get this product out the door. I've seen this. And you bring that empathy, I think, front of house, back of house, all the pieces that make the company work. So
yeah, that I think, to be honest, that makes it more interesting, right? If you actually go around the company and actually have different roles to really understand how it works, it's I think, especially if we talk to our fellow nerds, is really key that we like it's technology is one element, but who is using it is and in some cases, right, I think getting rid of technology is the best thing, right? I think we had so many overcomplicated processes that we actually, why do we need that? And it was like, yeah, actually you're right, we don't need it, right? And it's a good thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. In my team, we've been passing around this HBR article that talks about something called addition sickness, which is like when you're really transforming, when you're really trying to push the boundaries that, you know, I think one of the survey sites, around 80% of folks, their first inclination is to add something to fix a problem. Only about 20% of folks said you subtract things. And I think that's just a really fascinating mindset for, you know, again, Red Hat growing through, you know, such early open source to where it is now as an enterprise company. You know, same with IBM, a hardware company, a software company, a consulting company, you know, vended software, SaaS software, cloud, all of these things. And I think it's a different mindset. You get back to the basics, you get back to the fundamentals of what you want to be as a company, how you want to, you know, support, build technology that supports that.
I think that taking out the simplifying has been in this role that I've been, I think I was in India with my team, simplification, is a big thing. But it's also, when I look back at, you mentioned open source quite a few times, and Red Hat grew as probably one of the first commercial open source providers, right? And we did different waves. We were called a distributor or distribution. And to really realize what we did was really packaging open source, but also developing and hardening it for enterprise use. But I remember the early days was exactly, you were competing against the Solaris. I'm sure you remember Solaris.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh.
And it was a feature by feature comparison. Versus even with large customers, versus is like, Solaris has these great features. When was the last time you used them? And so kind of like that, Linux was never a MVP, but it actually provided as much stability as the enterprise needed, right? And that, I think, is a good reminder for our jobs internally as well. Removing stuff is really, really important, right? And it's not just technology, it's also process. I have this great example on credit checks. We did credit checks to the Gazoo for customers, and they realize, it's like, is that really necessary? It's like, with a like our customers pay, it's a very high percentage. When do you really need to do credit checks, and how do you do them? And it's been a small change that nobody actually talks about it, but it's been a huge impact. But I think it was removing stuff. It wasn't just building more of it.
Yeah, one of the things, like anchoring in on like that technology driving a beautiful user experience. I think you think about the credit check. I mean, if I take your example, individual working in the credit check area, like how do you make their life so much easier? And you know, to that point, it's simplification.
Yeah, and simplification, like to your point, right? As in, the credit check being, in our case, was a separate application, right? So it was like, oh, I can't do this in our Salesforce. I got to go into a different tool. And then it connects in the back versus like, how do we change this, make it simpler, move it into Sales Cloud and actually automate it? And bang, it was the user experience. I'm sure the new sellers don't even know what it means to do a credit check.
Oh, yeah, probably not at all. You know, talking a lot about sellers and supporting them, you know, there's a lot of CRMs out there. You guys had to make some choices there as you went through your transformation. How did you make your choices? How did you end up where you did with Salesforce?
That's a very good question, right? I think the part of CRM was kind of like, yeah, we had an old CRM that was based on Salesforce, was super old, super hacked up. And then the evaluation, we did look at competing products, right? Just to be a bit open-minded, right? But then the decision was much more within Salesforce. What do you use for the CRM part? What do you use for the, it's called the CPQ, the configure price quoting. What do you use for the contract language, the CLM part? For us was in the end much more important, where do we get this, that it flows and it provides that experience. And in the end, we did settle for Salesforce for two of those elements, one from a different company, and then other elements that we are adding on top. And I think that's the power of the Salesforce platform, that, yeah, you can pick from Salesforce, but then if you like something on Met, pick from a different company, it can be integrated well. And I think for us was like that, the flow and the experience for the seller to make it easy, right? To really be able from, even you could take marketing in the front as well. Hey, how do you come from leads to qualified opportunities? How do you create the opportunity? That was for us, the whole flow was important. But yeah, we've been, I think the platform is the right platform for us. And it provides that expansion, right? Without actually writing custom code, I think we've seen this. I mentioned before that we did a huge support installation, again, 14 years ago. And at that time, we had to implement a lot of the stuff for KCS is one of approach in support to actually a methodology. It didn't exist. Today, it exists, right? And I think that's where, when you do this transformation, you got to look at what's out there. And how do you use it before you just start re-implementing it, right? I think that's the part. But yeah, we are pretty happy with the platform and the expansion of it.
So I'm going to make a little bit of a pivot, because we did say at the beginning, this is about being human too. So In the very small world category, another guest on this podcast, Chris Anisek, is someone you've also known for a long time. And Chris is CTO of the Cloud Native Computing Foundation. And kind of got to thinking when we were chatting yesterday, is like, you know, I want to try to tie these two podcasts together. And I'm going to ask you the reverse of a question we'll ask Chris, which is, you work at Red Hat, an open source company. What do you think of open source foundations and the role they're playing both in the enterprise and, you know, kind of maybe let's even think about, you know, AI is the topic on everyone's mind going forward.
Yeah, I think, it's a good topic. Yeah, Chris, I met Chris in Tokyo. I think he likes Japan. I do as well. And Japan, interesting enough, before we get to the foundation, interesting enough, Japan, very traditional, very conservative in IT, but they embraced the open source actually really, really early. And they actually participated as well. A lot of the big Japanese companies participated early in foundations, right? Open source foundations, Linux Foundation. I think that was one of the events that I met Chris in. And I do think it changed. I think if we go back 15 years, a lot of the foundations tried to kind of bring the spirit of open source out. It was more, in some case, almost felt like a religion, whereas you got to be part of that. And I think Red Hat was always more, hey, we are commercial. We are making money. We need to make money, but we give back a lot, right? A lot of our half the company are developers that work on open source. So it's a huge contribution, but getting that mix in, initially it was really hard with working with foundations to actually understand, no, yeah, we are a for-profit company. I think nowadays, the foundations are much more focused on, it's not the open source is politics or religion. Open source is the development model that works in this world, right? I think every you see it everywhere, right? It's the new way to actually collaborate in a structured way that you don't lose your intellectual property, but your intellectual property is different. So the foundations, especially the Cloud Native Foundation, they are key, right? The key to bringing people together. They are key to actually foster the collaboration. I think that's really important, right? And I think nowadays, I think it's very constructive. And also getting into like new fields, right? Like telco is a field that you think open source and telco 10 years ago, nobody thought about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But now it's all open source, right? As in, and that was literally from black box that you buy from like 5-6 vendors in this world to literally an open structure. And that was done a lot by having foundations and actually bringing those telco providers into these foundations. And, oh, this is how you can collaborate. Same with car industry, right? I think that's where you see if you go into your car and they all have a screen now, you search for open source licenses, they have
absolutely
to list them, right?
It's a pile, it's
unbelievable, right? And I do think that's the foundation bringing this together and driving collaboration is important, right? And it's now augmenting what Red Hat does. So Red Hat participates also in a lot of these foundations. And so I'm sure, I wonder how he responds as in about it, but we'll
check his. And no, I think it's fascinating. I mean, I think, again, the humanity side of it. So, you know, love the weave in the story with the foundations, but like the humanity side of it, it's such a small world that we live in. I mean, for you and I to meet, you know, at the respective points in our career and, you know, someone you've known for what you said about 15 years now, maybe you've known Chris, I've known him for 20 plus years. It's, you know, it's such a small world and there's so many amazing people out there we can learn from and see, you know, the unique paths they took and just all the perspectives that come to the table. So
it's also like the way we operate now, I think that's also like, I think for our roles as a, you know, driving the IT strategy is really, it's different than 10 years ago in proprietary systems, right? As in, oh, we lock all end devices down, et cetera. Nowadays, it's a lot about, hey, how do you actually enable employees working in a community, working with foundations, and there is code going this way, code going that way. I was, I used to work for a proprietary Unix company, and even access to source code in that company was super restricted, right? And
oh,
that
absolutely.
whole changes the paradigm. But yeah, I think in the last, I've been like 19, I've done actually stuff before in open source, but to be honest, meeting these people and getting to know people like at work, but then outside, not just over code is the fantastic part, right? And really the curiosity that I think we all got to bring to the job is what makes this interesting.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things, obviously our companies work really closely together, and it's, you can now, you know, build stacks for your, you know, for your enterprise on open source and proprietary, getting the right mix, getting the pros and cons. And, you know, I'm curious, the trends, some of the trends maybe you've seen is, do you see people, you know, have you seen a switch from proprietary to open source, like explicit switches in your career with some customers?
Obviously, being at Red Hat, I've seen so many customers going from basically a proprietary system to open source. I mean, we wouldn't be a big company now if that wouldn't happen. But I think it's a mix, right? I think in some cases, you know, Red Hat has been an infrastructure player. We've done the infrastructure, you know, all the public clouds run on one way or other on open source, be it our products, be it other products. And then you have layers above, right? Like you pick a Salesforce, you pick a SAP that's layered on, but on top you might have a proprietary thing that's really for your business, right? I think this is not, it's not black and white these days, right? There's in and we got to be okay with that. Even at Red Hat, in like if you tried 10 years ago to introduce a proprietary software at Red Hat, there was probably like 6 months open discussion why you're an idiot, why not doing it in open source. And I think we learned the way as well, as in, hey, there's stuff that we're okay, it's proprietary, right? It makes no difference. Some cases we are very, very opinionated about some stuff that got to be open source.
Yeah, but I mean, that's okay, right? I mean, it's... If your goal is like, what's the best solution for, you know, your employees to use and your customers, it's kind of like, those are the good, healthy debates to have. Yeah. So kind of back to maybe an extension of that, seeking knowledge with our networks, with the people that we get to meet and whose brains we get to pick. But it's like, you know, there is that, you know, there's that curiosity, there's that like scientific drive for healthy questioning. And I think, you know, that's getting so, so important, the way the world we live in is evolving.
That's fantastic.
So we kind of covered, you know, about our jobs, kind of some of the stuff we do. Hopefully you don't mind me throwing this out, but I think you have a fascinating, like going back to the beginning of your career, I believe you were a tank mechanic early on. As I'm thinking about some advice for folks watching this, you know, there might be folks watching this again who say, hey, how do I, you know, I'm interested in not just what we know, but how do we get into these roles? It's like, I'm really curious, like, is there lessons you learned over the course of, you know, such, you know, going through that, you know, working for proprietary companies, like, is there lessons that, like, are there specific lessons you learned that at points in time really that have shaped who you are today?
So I did study mechanical engineering, and then I live in Switzerland. We have mandatory military service. And so that's where I don't know exactly how I got, you know, you walk in an office, you get a stamp, tank mechanic, out you go, right? And then you start fixing tanks, which blows my mind. But then I did realize during my university time, I was actually not talented at mechanical engineering, but I felt my parents were like kind of already up here. I said, oh, let me finish this degree and then we'll see. I did actually realize I was pretty good in software. And so my first job was writing software in a textile industry. And so I came from developer, and then I always had a lot of curiosity for traveling. And so I started traveling. I was a consultant. I worked in fascinating places. I worked in Africa for a train system software. I worked in Hong Kong for a horse racing company.
I'm learning even more about you. This is
which
amazing.
That was, and then you get this junction that you think, what would have happened if I stayed in Hong Kong doing betting on horses? Very high transaction. But I always let myself kind of like, oh, there's another opportunity. I went to the US, lived in the US for a long time. But all these pieces together kind of shaped, I think, what what and how I can do my work and how I enjoy it as well, right? I think my enjoyment is not writing code anymore. Sometimes I wish I could go in a corner and write code.
And I miss it sometimes.
Exactly. But on the other hand, I do enjoy kind of more the strategic parts to think about, hey, how do we get there? And then also the tactical execution of it. But I would, if I had to, I got three kids, they're all like kind of, none of them is doing IT, which blows my mind. Like, good for them, right? One is doing political science, which will wonder it's probably needed in this world. But if somebody goes in a technical space, I think the curiosity, try to learn, is really important, right? As in that you stay open-minded, right? As in, and I also feel like a lot of the companies do, oh, you got to go in management to be successful. I think that's another mistake, right? If you're a really happy individual contributor, you write your code, you can also architect systems, you can be a lead of systems, is important as well, not just getting hung up on that. And I've done pivots, right? Like when I took this role, a much smaller role than I had in driving sales. But for me, it was, oh, this is back to more technology, more driving it. But yeah, that curiosity and being agile in really like, oh, let's do something else. I think that would be my biggest recommendation.
No, that's incredible advice. In all seriousness, I know we talk to each other every day, but thank you for taking the extra time out of your day to do this with me. Just love working with you every chance we get. And, you know, so grateful to have you part of kind of the Nerd Network. And thanks again for your time today.
Thank you very much, Anne. Thank you. Very happy to be part of your Nerd Network.
Thanks, everybody out there, for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this, and I hope we will see you back at our next episode of Transformers.